This is the Young Farmers Podcast. I'm Lindsay Lesher-Shoot. Many people recognize this past Monday as Indigenous Peoples Day. To celebrate, I wanted to speak with my friend Clayton Harvey, a young farmer and member of the White Mountain Apache tribe in Arizona. His farm, Inde Bakia, has a mission of promoting personal and cultural health among White Mountain Apache through agriculture. Clayton shares how his experience as a farmer has shaped his spiritual identity and the need to keep those traditions alive. Clayton also talks about how his journey to Standing Rock has influenced him and inspired other Indigenous young people to farm.
Hi, I'm Steve Munno, organic vegetable farmer at Massaro Community Farm in Woodbridge, Connecticut. I've been a member of the National Young Farmers Coalition since 2011 and a member of my local chapter, the New Connecticut Farmer Alliance. The National Young Farmers Coalition works to change policy, build networks, and provide business services to ensure all young farmers have the chance to succeed. For $35 a year, you can join too. By becoming a member, you are helping to build a bright and just future for agriculture in the U.S. And you'll also get discounts like 10% off Johnny's Selected Seeds and 10% off Haas Tools. To join, go to youngfarmers.org.
Just a general question. How many Apache tribes are there in the U.S. at this time?
So there is, like, there's the White Mountain, there's San Carlos, there's the Camp Verde tribe, there's the Jicarilla tribe, the Mescalero tribe, and there's the Lapan band. So there's about six recognized tribes between Arizona, New Mexico, and Texas.
And they're all self-governing?
Yes, yes, they pretty much are.
And the White Mountain tribe at Fort Apache, how much land is in that reservation?
So there is 1.6 million acres of federal trust land. And what I mean by federal trust land is that the White Mountain people didn't sign a treaty. We were put here by executive order, meaning that we were just placed here and told to make this place home. That was why one of my motivations for going to Standing Rock was because at any point our reservation could be taken from us.
And you say at any time it could go, like there could be pipeline development, or there's like you have less security because there's not a treaty in place?
Yes, yes, exactly. We have one of the heaviest deposits of iron on our reservation, and there have actually been people who have been trying to mine iron on our reservation. And so, you know, we really had to fight to keep, you know, mining companies from coming in and mining iron from our reservation.
Do many of the kids who grow up on the reservation, do they stay? Do they go and then come back? What is sort of the typical path?
So, you know, reservation life isn't all that great. And most of the time, our young people don't leave the reservation. Very little of our tribal members are able to graduate. And it all goes back to, you know, the trauma that was inflicted upon our people. And it's like a revolving cycle that we continue to embed upon ourselves. But the people that do, that are fortunate enough to leave the reservation do go off and get higher education. And what's very cool is that a huge majority of them do return back to the reservation to be of service to the community. And that's why this farm is here. The farm that I work for in Inde Bakia is to work with tribal members who are here to help them to become self-sufficient through the land and using what our people have survived off of, which is farming, so that they can use that as a supplement of income.
So the farm was developed as an opportunity for healing for the community.
Yes, definitely.
How did it get started?
When our tribe was mitigating for our water rights, our program director was looking for water development and ways to use water. And this area was once a hay farm. And so she identified this area as a possible way to use water in revamping the pivot systems and starting to grow hay again.
Just on that point of the water, was that sort of this assumption of use it or lose it? Like if you weren't using your water, then it could be allocated elsewhere?
Yeah, yeah.
So to maintain your right, you need to continue use it, or it'll be given prioritized elsewhere.
Yeah. And so somewhere along the line, they started a little garden, and that garden proved was a success. And so the next following year, they decided that they were going to increase their production area. And so going from a little 10 by 20 plot, you know, the garden is now about six, not the garden itself, but the production area is about 6 acres with over 100 fruit trees and about an acre garden and two huge cornfields.
Okay, am I saying this right? How do you say it? Indibakaya?
Yeah, Indibakaya.
Indibakaya? Okay.
Yeah, so translated in there, that's how we say the people, and Bikia is their cornfield or their field, and so translated, it's the people's farm.
And what language is that?
It's the Western Apache dialect.
Is that a living language?
Yes, yes, it is. It's hanging on by a thread, but you know, we're still speaking it.
Do you speak it in ceremony, or are there classes and... Or is it used conversationally?
It's most common with our older folks, but as the generation gets younger and younger, most kids don't really speak the language. But there are some classes. We still do have ceremonies that, you know, a lot of our language is implemented into those ceremonies. It's here, but like I said, you know, it's slowly we're dying off.
So... what role does the farm play to the tribe and to the community?
I guess we're just taking a real holistic approach when it comes to serving the community by, you know, mentally, spiritually, physically, and using those to help our people bring healing, to identify themselves as Apache people through farming, and using that identity to heal themselves, to find a place within themselves that they can appreciate who they are and hopefully grow off of that. The mission statement of our farm is to use agriculture to bring healing to our people. And so by doing that, you know, we offer farmer training education classes. And then we also are marketing our produce to various tribal programs and tribal schools. I like to say we do play a huge role in our community when it comes to being of service to the White Mountain Apache tribe.
So you're also, in addition to running the farm, you're training other members of the tribe to start their own farms. Have some of them gone on to do just that?
Well, we just finished our first year of our education training program, and so, but a huge majority of our participants have started backyard gardens and using that to feed their families.
And is there land available for members of the tribe to start farms? I mean, the reservation covers a very large area. How is that land allocated and used right now? And is it being used for farming, some of it?
So there are farms on the reservation, and these farms have been passed down from generation to generation. We don't own the land. We can't sell the land because it's held in trust with the U.S. government. And so when we apply for land, we're assigned plots. We're assigned areas. We're not really, it's not ours to own. It's just we're assigned these little areas.
I mean, you brought up spirituality as something that is part of the mission of the farm. Can you speak to that? How is that connected in the practices of the farm and the programs and education?
So with spirituality, you know, in the Apache way, you know, everything is conducted in prayer. You know, our people were very superstitious, you know, and they did everything in prayer because they wanted everything to be done the right way. And so in that sense, we kind of carry on the same teachings and encourage people to respect the land. Like they say, you know, you respect the land and it'll respect you. And also part of that spirituality is finding who you are through agriculture, through farming.
What does that mean to you?
Well, to me, my mom always tells me, like when I tell her I'm going to go work out the cornfield or the garden, she says, oh, you're going to go massage Mother Earth. You're going to help take care of her. And, you know, when you help take care of her, you know, you see the result and it helps you to grow as a person. You know, I growing up, I struggled a lot with a lot of things. And as I grew up, I developed depression and contemplated suicide many times. Really did a lot of drugs and was a very delinquent youth. And through agriculture, through farming, I was able to find a meaning in my life that this is where I'm supposed to be. Our elders tell us that where we're standing at on our reservation, that this is the center of the universe for us. This is where we are meant to be. This is home. And in that, with that, you know, I was able to use that tool and to find healing, to find my purpose in life. And I feel that my purpose is to be here, be a part of this farm and to be with my people. So that's how I look at spirituality and farming and bringing all that together. In Apache, you know, the word for mind and land is the same thing. And so it goes to show the relationship that our people had with the land. You know, we were one with the land.
Interesting. Why do you think that is?
I've asked that same question, and they told me that there's really no way to translate it in English. So it's kind of left me at a standstill at that point. But, you know, the more I got into farming, I realized that we do, you know, we believe that our mother is alive, that our mother has a heartbeat in the same sense that our mind is alive. And that the same way that we treat our Mother Earth, we need to treat our minds. Because we need to, you know, we can eat all the healthy food, we can be active and all this other great stuff and involved in our community and our ceremonies, but if our mental health isn't, you know, right, you know, then we're just, you know, a broken puzzle, how I like to interpret it.
I love that idea of your home, where you are being your center of the universe. It just gives it such weight as a, I don't know, I feel like our society broadly puts those centers of universe, like our political center or cultural centers, like in big cities, right? As opposed to like what's right in front of you as the most important thing.
Yeah.
Is that journey of finding farming? I mean, Clayton, you talked about some of the challenges you faced growing up and how you've changed over time. Do you attribute some of that to farming, or was that part of your journey?
Like I said, you know, like you mentioned, there's many challenges that I faced, but you know, farming has brought me, I guess, more of a sense of identity and a place to where I can identify myself when it comes to land. And, you know, I left the reservation, I came back, I left, I came back, I left, I came back, I left, I came back. So finally I was like, okay, I'm here, what can I do? And so, you know, I was just meant to be here, you know. And so I guess it kind of is both ways. It was a part of my journey in finding myself, and that journey brought me to farming, to where I was able to totally heal myself and to find a sense of belonging.
Like, what is it about farming? Is it working with Mother Nature? Is it working with the soil and the land and just being so active in the place and the community, or some sort of combination of those things?
Yeah. I think it's a combination of everything. Even like working with seeds, because we believe our seeds are alive, and holding those seeds in our hands and close to our hearts. And it is a combination of everything.
Are there particular types of traditional crops that you are growing? Like, how does Apache culture influence like your general farm practices?
So a lot of farming, like traditional farming, was done, and everything was done by hand. And as I said, you know, everything was done with prayer. We'll look at the stars, the moon, and those were the ones who guided us and told us when it's time to plant. When we work with our community, we really have to be careful in how we do things. We don't want to lose anybody. We want to be respectful of everybody's beliefs, because we do have a huge number of Apache people that follow Christianity. And so when it comes to spirituality and implementing those on our farm, you know, we really have to be careful in how we present it. Most of the time, we're just taking a modern approach to farming, and when I do have the chance, you know, when it's just my alone time, that's when I do say my prayers. I was told that when each year you plant, you place 4 rocks in each corner of your field, and that's like a way to, I guess, an offering, you know, to let our creators know that, you know, this is our boundary, and this is where we're going to be planting. And may everything within these 4 rocks be bountiful. That's what, you know, I'm able to do. But you know, with my family, and when we do our own planting, you know, we're able to practice our beliefs. And so.
And are those passed down to you through your family, Clayton? Is that where you have learned these connections with planting and spirituality, or were those something that you were aware of growing up?
My family, most of them are Christians, and they don't really follow those practices anymore. So the people that I do go to for prayers and to consult, you know, they're medicine people.
You must feel some amount of responsibility, because I'm at, right? Because you have to be that person for the next generation.
Definitely. The reason why I really take heart to this is, you know, I found healing in this, and I want to share my experience with other people who are dealing with the same thing. I want to show them that corn needs to be planted, you know, our fields need to be tended to. We can't just become complacent in our depression. We have to move forward, and we have to learn from those downfalls in life, and instead of using that as something that overcame us, but to use that to overcome other things. And if we can overcome depression, then we can overcome anything. And so that's really where my passion is driven from, is just healing and the sense of, I guess, identity that I've developed or I have found through farming.
So Clayton, I guess I feel sad that when I was coming through Arizona a few years ago, I missed you, but it was fine because you were on your way to Standing Rock, I believe. On that day, I was like looking back at your Facebook wall, and you wrote, "Today we start our journey to Standing Rock to stand the front line with our brothers and sisters. As farmers, we feel this is important. Without clean drinking water, how are we able to proclaim food sovereignty? How are we going to feed our people? Water is everything. Without it, we are nothing." I just wondered if you could talk to me about Standing Rock and what that journey meant for you.
Oh, gosh. That was like another spiritual journey in itself, and being there, it really, really opened my eyes in the importance of advocating not only just for them, but for my own people. As I said earlier, that our reservation could be taken from us at any moment's notice. And I felt that by being there, it made me realize that we need to educate ourselves. We need to get ourselves ready if that point should ever come. And it has taught us, to value, water, to value where our water comes from. And so it's just really opened my eyes in a lot of areas when it comes to protecting our own land, protecting other people's land, and using water very, very wisely, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Back in, I believe, like the 50s, our reservation was damming up springs and little rivers so that we could start developing lakes for tourism. And a huge majority of our water flows down to the metropolitan area of Phoenix. And when we were blocking our rivers up so we could, use it to bring income here and to try to generate jobs for our people, there are actually people coming up from the Phoenix area with guns and wanting to harm our tribal members for trying to develop the economy here on our reservation. They wanted our water rights. And so my grandfather was one of the lead persons who was headed the project. And my mom was telling us that she remembers having to, camp out in the boonies because his family was being threatened. He was being threatened. His life was on the line. And he was fighting for what was rightfully ours. And in that sense, I kind of felt like it was my responsibility to help go to Standing Rock because, that was what my family, that's my grandfather led that. And I felt like I needed to be there as a part of that too.
Some big shoes to fill, I guess. But so going to Standing Rock, did you go there with other members of your tribe?
Yes. So we went there. There's about six of us that went when we got to the river. It was really sad. People were being dragged in because they were hit with tear gas with a rubber bullet. People were screaming. There's no ambulance. There is no. There was really no. There were medics there, but they were all volunteer. There wasn't any organization there to run people to the hospital, and it felt like they were on their own. And it was really, really sad to see all that going on and thinking, is this really happening, in this day and age? It's what, 2016, and is this what's happening in Indian country still? I thought we were past this, I just didn't feel right. And that's when I was like, okay, I'm here, we're going to fight. And it was one of our members of our group that went, she's a short little girl. She's about maybe like a little under 5 feet. And people were swimming across the river to the sheriff and his posse that were there and trying to protect the oil workers. And her name is Shy. And I was like, Where's Shy? We need to find her. We need to stay together. And they're like, oh, she's on the other side. And, and she's like this short little feisty girl and really wanted to put up a fight. And just seeing her determination just made me want to do more. And so, rather than holding back and being a bystander. You know, we stood up for it, and, you know, we weren't fighting physically or violently. We were fighting with our prayers.
Mm.
We're fighting with smudging ourselves with cedar and with sage. We're fighting with our drum beats, with our songs. And so that's how we're fighting the front line. And I guess that's when it became spiritual for me, is using our prayers as a way of fighting for our water. And so that was a key point of it becoming a spiritual battle for me.
There are many tribes that were participating in Standing Rock. How did all of those spiritual practices sort of come together there? You know, that moment was shared, and was there sort of also sharing of traditions?
Yeah, so like there are drum groups there. You know, although, you know, they weren't singing in Apache or Navajo or whatever indigenous group you're a part of, you know, built that drum beat. And so it was the beat of the drum that brought us together.
I mean, I've actually heard of young people like going and farming, like going home and farming after Standing Rock.
Yeah.
Is that something you've also heard?
Yes. So one of my friends, his name is Graham. He's from the Shiprock area in New Mexico, and he was in Standing Rock. And when, you know, he returned back home, he's never had farmed before, and now he's growing all this crazy corn, and, you know, he's preserving this corn and drying it out, and, you know, using it to feed his community, and even developing like composting piles within the community and teaching other families about farming and gardening. And so he's just one example, you know, of people going back home and farming after Standing Rock.
Given the tribe's relationship with the federal government, are there, other than resource extraction and this issue of national monuments, are there any other specific concerns that you have or your tribe has right now, and risks to your home?
Not specifically to our home, but you look at the San Francisco Peaks and Flagstaff. That's a sacred area to all the tribes within the Colorado Plateau and the Hopi, the Navajo, the Apache people. And there's a huge ski resort on that mountain. And what that mountain has proposed is that they use reclaimed water to make snow, meaning that they're going to use sewer water and using human waste, you know, to put on our sacred mountain. You know, that's an issue that we're dealing with. And it's in our way, in our eyes, when you use human feces or human waste in any way, it's a way of bad medicine. You know, it's putting bad things on people. And we see that as a very bad move on their part. So that's a huge concern. And then back to mining, you know, again, you know, we have one of the largest deposits of iron in the world. And, you know, many times, you know, we've been threatened to lose that portion of our reservation for mining. And so that's also, you know, a huge threat, you know, when it comes to protecting our land.
So Clayton, you recently posted something, just a statement, waiting for the Western world to catch up to indigenous knowledge systems. I guess I'll identify with the Western world. What do you think that the Western world needs to catch up with?
Respecting our Mother Earth. And so there's a survey that was conducted about people's misconception on Native people. And most, you know, people think that most Native Americans were rich and we live off of casinos, you know, which is totally not true. We're struggling just like everyone else. We look at Exxon, we look at like the piping industry, the oil industry, with all these places that are extracting minerals from Mother Earth and using that and destroying her. And here we are, you know, on our small little reservations where we're setting land aside so that, you know, we could rebuild and protect and, I guess, revitalize, you know, nature and protecting it. And so in that sense, you know, I feel that the Western world, you know, is about destructing our Mother Earth, you know, rather than, you know, protecting her. And so I guess that was where I was coming from.
Makes sense to me. Clayton, thank you so much for speaking with me, and it's great to get an update. I look forward to hearing stories about the graduates of of your program.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Great to be in touch. All right.
Okay.
Talk to you soon.
Okay.
Thanks. Bye. To learn more about the farm and the White Mountain Apache tribe, check out the links in the show notes for this episode. Clayton, thank you for being on today's show. Don't forget to subscribe and please comment on the show in iTunes. This podcast was edited by Hannah Beal and recorded with the generous support of Radio Kingston.